Hello, this is the listening part of your Year 12 exam in English for 2010. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. Perfumes. Listen to a talk about the history of perfumes. Read the statements below. Each of them contains some false information. Underline the wrong words or numbers and write the correct one on the line provided after the statement. You have a minute to read the task.
Although we still don't really know how our sense of smell works, our love of perfume goes back a very long way. The ancient Egyptians used to put perfumed oils in their hair, and the oil found in Tutankhamun's tomb was still fragrant when it was opened 2,000 years after he'd been buried there. And at feasts in Roman times, white birds with their wings soaked in perfume flew around the room so that the air was filled with a sweet scent. In fact, all through history, kings and queens have shown a passion for perfumes. In 1573, Queen Elizabeth I of England was given a pair of perfumed gloves. She wore them all the time and loved them so much that she had a coat and a dress made which had the same scent. In Paris, there's a perfume museum called Osmothèque, which has an amazing 1,100 perfumes. Next to the museum is a school where perfumers are taught how to create new fragrances. It takes 8 years to become a fully qualified perfumer, and there are only about 400 in the world. To make a single perfume, you need between 400 and 500 ingredients, which are often extremely expensive. One of the ingredients in Chanel No. 5, for example, costs $40,000 for half a kilo and smells like burnt candle wax. Incidentally, Chanel No. 5 got its name because it was the fifth perfume offered to Coco Chanel by her perfumer, Ernest Beau. And just in case you think perfumes are only for women, it's worth pointing out that men have always worn perfumes in one form or another. The French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte loved perfume and apparently used one or two bottles a day. These days, many men wear perfumes designed for both men and women, such as CK1, or even perfumes just for men, like Michael Jordan Cologne, named after the famous American basketball player. How do you decide whether a perfume is right for you? Well, the first rule is never buy a perfume that you haven't tried on your skin. Different skin types react differently to each perfume. What smells wonderful on a friend may well smell terrible on you. And secondly, keep perfume in a dark place at a temperature of no higher than 15 degrees Celsius. Heat and light are the enemies of perfume.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Although we still don't really know how our sense of smell works, our love of perfume goes back a very long way. The ancient Egyptians used to put perfumed oils in their hair, and the oil found in Tutankhamun's tomb was still fragrant when it was opened 2,000 years after he'd been buried there. And at feasts in Roman times, white birds with their wings soaked in perfume flew around the room so that the air was filled with a sweet scent. In fact, all through history, kings and queens have shown a passion for perfumes. In 1573, Queen Elizabeth I of England was given a pair of perfumed gloves. She wore them all the time and loved them so much that she had a coat and a dress made which had the same scent. In Paris, there's a perfume museum called Osmothèque, which has an amazing 1,100 perfumes. Next to the museum is a school where perfumers are taught how to create new fragrances. It takes 8 years to become a fully qualified perfumer, and there are only about 400 in the world. To make a single perfume, you need between 400 and 500 ingredients, which are often extremely expensive. One of the ingredients in Chanel No. 5, for example, costs $40,000 for half a kilo and smells like burnt candle wax. Incidentally, Chanel No. 5 got its name because it was the fifth perfume offered to Coco Chanel by her perfumer, Ernest Beau. And just in case you think perfumes are only for women, it's worth pointing out that men have always worn perfumes in one form or another. The French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte loved perfume and apparently used one or two bottles a day. These days, many men wear perfumes designed for both men and women, such as CK1, or even perfumes just for men, like Michael Jordan Cologne, named after the famous American basketball player. How do you decide whether a perfume is right for you? Well, the first rule is never buy a perfume that you haven't tried on your skin. Different skin types react differently to each perfume. What smells wonderful on a friend may well smell terrible on you. And secondly, keep perfume in a dark place at a temperature of no higher than 15 degrees Celsius. Heat and light are the enemies of perfume.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. Task two, hot-headed ice borers. Listen to the story and mark the following statements as true or false. Tick the appropriate box. Look at the example. There is a minute to read the task.
In April 1995, the magazine Discover announced that a biologist called Dr. April Pazzo had discovered a completely new species of animal, the hot-headed ice borer. This small animal was able to hunt and kill penguins by making holes in the ice with its hot head. Apparently, Dr. Pazzo had been working in the Antarctic for 6 months when she came across the new species. While she was studying a group of penguins, she noticed one member of the group sinking rapidly into a hole in the ice. When she pulled the frightened penguin out of the ice, she found that several small animals had attached themselves to it and were eating it. These animals, which no scientist had ever seen previously, turned out to be hot-headed ice borers. In the article, Dr. Pazzo suggested that the death of the famous explorer Philippe Poisson in 1837, which had been a mystery for over 100 years, might have been due to the hot-headed ice borers. The magazine got more letters about this April Fool's Day joke than it had ever received before for any other article in its history.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
In April 1995, the magazine Discover announced that a biologist called Dr. April Pazzo had discovered a completely new species of animal, the hot-headed ice borer. This small animal was able to hunt and kill penguins by making holes in the ice with its hot head. Apparently, Dr. Pazzo had been working in the Antarctic for 6 months when she came across the new species. While she was studying a group of penguins, she noticed one member of the group sinking rapidly into a hole in the ice. When she pulled the frightened penguin out of the ice, she found that several small animals had attached themselves to it and were eating it. These animals, which no scientist had ever seen previously, turned out to be hot-headed ice borers. In the article, Dr. Pazzo suggested that the death of the famous explorer Philippe Poisson in 1837, which had been a mystery for over 100 years, might have been due to the hot-headed ice borers. The magazine got more letters about this April Fool's Day joke than it had ever received before for any other article in its history.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 2. Go on to task 3. Task 3 music and art. Listen to the interview about the impact of music and art lessons on children's progress at school and circle the correct statements. Look at the example. You have a minute and a half to read the task.
This is All Things Considered. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. Most schools offer music and art classes to give students a well-rounded education. New research indicates those classes may do more for students than just give them an appreciation of the arts. According to a study in tomorrow's issue of the journal Nature, studying music and art can significantly advance a child's reading skills and especially boost math proficiency. Michelle Trudeau reports.
A class of six-year-olds getting a special music lesson. Part of a special arts program that researcher Martin Gardner and his colleagues at the music school in Rhode Island designed for several elementary schools in the state.
We started out wanting to see the impact of arts training in some first and second grade kids.
So some classrooms had an extra hour of this special arts curriculum incorporated into their normal school week.
And other classrooms getting the standard curriculum in the art.
The standard curriculum, say the researchers, gave students music lessons twice a month and art lessons twice a month. The typical music lesson tended to be somewhat passive, says Gardner. Students listened to tapes and concerts and talked about music in class. In contrast, the special arts classes met twice weekly and got students actively involved as a way to teach them the basic building blocks.
The kinds of skills that they are learning in these grades are, in music, they're learning to sing together properly, sing together on pitch, sing together in rhythm, sing together songs. And in the visual arts, they're learning to draw shapes and deal with colors and forms and so forth.
A very interactive, experiential approach that took advantage of children's natural inclination to master enjoyable tasks and build upon sequential skills.
And at the end of 7 months, all the kids in the school took standardized tests. And we looked not only at how the teachers rated the kids on attitude and so forth, but also how the kids scored on their tests.
And here's what the researchers found. First of all, those kids who'd entered the first grade toward the bottom of the class in reading and then received the special arts program for the year had now caught up to the average in reading.
And that in itself is wonderful, but in addition, they were now statistically ahead in learning math.
Dramatically ahead in math compared to the kids who had not received the special arts classes throughout the year. The researchers found also that the kids who continued their special arts classes for a second year continued to improve in math. Psychologist Francis Rauscher from the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh says this is an important study showing that a group of typical children, regardless of talent or parental involvement, can reap benefits from arts training that affects other academic areas, especially math. Rauscher's own recent research could help explain why arts education might have this additional benefit. In her study, a group of three-year-olds were given music lessons in preschool, piano and singing. Rauscher found they scored significantly higher on a particular IQ test that measures abstract reasoning, a skill, adds Rauscher, essential to mathematics. Just how music enhances mathematical skills is unknown. It may be by the more general effect of increasing self-esteem, or maybe something neurological happens in the brain. Or maybe, psychologist Andrea Halpern from Bucknell University suggests, these children are learning how to learn. Whatever may be going on in the growing brains of children, both psychological and biological, these new findings underscore an increasing awareness among scientists and educators that a rich learning environment can significantly enhance children's intellectual development in unexpected ways. I'm Michelle Trudeau, reporting.
You have a minute and a half now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
This is All Things Considered. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. Most schools offer music and art classes to give students a well-rounded education. New research indicates those classes may do more for students than just give them an appreciation of the arts. According to a study in tomorrow's issue of the journal Nature, studying music and art can significantly advance a child's reading skills and especially boost math proficiency. Michelle Trudeau reports.
A class of six-year-olds getting a special music lesson. Part of a special arts program that researcher Martin Gardner and his colleagues at the music school in Rhode Island designed for several elementary schools in the state.
We started out wanting to see the impact of arts training in some first and second grade kids.
So some classrooms had an extra hour of this special arts curriculum incorporated into their normal school week.
And other classrooms getting the standard curriculum in the arts.
The standard curriculum, say the researchers, gave students music lessons twice a month and art lessons twice a month. The typical music lesson tended to be somewhat passive, says Gardner. Students listened to tapes and concerts and talked about music in class. In contrast, the special arts classes met twice weekly and got students actively involved as a way to teach them the basic building blocks.
The kinds of skills that they are learning in these grades are, in music, they're learning to sing together properly, sing together on pitch, sing together in rhythm, sing together songs. And in the visual arts, they're learning to draw shapes and deal with colors and forms and so forth.
A very interactive, experiential approach that took advantage of children's natural inclination to master enjoyable tasks and build upon sequential skills.
And at the end of 7 months, all the kids in the school took standardized tests. And we looked not only at how the teachers rated the kids on attitude and so forth, but also how the kids scored on their tests.
And here's what the researchers found. First of all, those kids who'd entered the first grade toward the bottom of the class in reading and then received the special arts program for the year had now caught up to the average in reading.
And that in itself is wonderful, but in addition, they were now statistically ahead in learning math.
Dramatically ahead in math compared to the kids who had not received the special arts classes throughout the year. The researchers found also that the kids who continued their special arts classes for a second year continued to improve in math. Psychologist Francis Rauscher from the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh says this is an important study showing that a group of typical children, regardless of talent or parental involvement, can reap benefits from arts training that affects other academic areas, especially math. Rauscher's own recent research could help explain why arts education might have this additional benefit. In her study, a group of three-year-olds were given music lessons in preschool, piano and singing. Rauscher found they scored significantly higher on a particular IQ test that measures abstract reasoning, a skill, adds Rauscher, essential to mathematics. Just how music enhances mathematical skills is unknown. It may be by the more general effect of increasing self-esteem, or maybe something neurological happens in the brain. Or maybe, psychologist Andrea Halpern from Bucknell University suggests, these children are learning how to learn. Whatever may be going on in the growing brains of children, both psychological and biological, these new findings underscore an increasing awareness among scientists and educators that a rich learning environment can significantly enhance children's intellectual development in unexpected ways. I'm Michelle Trudeau, reporting.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 3 and the whole listening test.